Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Vimal, and so today I'll be talking about iQ, which is our platform for taming the network performance unpredictability in the cloud. This is joint work with Mohammad Alizadeh, who's a PhD student, and my advisors, Balaji and David, and also Changhun Kim and Albert Greenberg from Windows Azure. So I'm not going to spend much time convincing you guys that network performance variability is a real problem. And one of the most popular examples that we have seen in the blog post is Netflix, where they stated that when they moved from the private data centers to Amazon EC2, which is a shared environment, they had to completely re-architect their applications. And this is because they had to deal with a lot of variable performance issues that they experienced on Amazon EC2. Now, a large and capable organization such as Netflix might have the technical power to go and rewrite their entire code base. When we talked with many of our customers, we realized that most of them don't even realize that there are network issues that are affecting the performance of their applications. In fact, the knee-jerk reaction of many of them is just spin up more VMs to handle the extra load. Now, this is kind of paradoxical, because by spinning up more VMs, you're introducing a greater network dependency for the performance of your application. So I'm not going to spend much time convincing you guys about this. But before we go into more details about how we go about solving this problem, it's helpful to understand the context in which we're operating. So operators like to think of this cloud as a huge warehouse-scale computer that offers some vital resources such as compute, storage, and the network. And in fact, by definition, a multi-tenant cloud is multi-tenant. So there are going to be applications which share the servers and all of the resources in the cloud. What is sort of non-obvious is that this is the case even in private data centers. For example, in this excerpt by some slide from Google, Jeff Dean says that a random server inside their cluster has MapReduce jobs, a Bigtable tablet server that might have different dependencies on CPU, network, disk, as well as memory requirements. So one way to think about this problem is we're trying to provision the warehouse-scale computer. So you need mechanisms that isolate CPU, memory, and disk. Fortunately, we have mechanisms, or we have a way of thinking about these problems. But for the network, it's a bit unclear. In fact, the network is a distributed resource, and that results can be like non-intuitive, and the next talk is going to highlight some key ideas from that. So at a very high level, if you think about sharing the network, there are two main components. There's a policy, and then there's a mechanism. The policy lays down some high-level guidelines on how the network should be shared. And the mechanism actually goes ahead and implements this policy. So the mechanism basically computes rates according to the policy and enforces these rates on aggregates of traffic which are existing or which are starting from servers at the edge. It could be per VM, which is in the case of a multi-tenant cloud, or it can be a per service. If you have MapReduce jobs all co-located on a single server, they can have different bandwidth requirements, or it can be search, or it can be the Bigtable tablet server that you saw earlier. So I'm not going to go into much details about what policies are good for sharing the network. For the purpose of this talk, I'm going to assume a simple one, which is the customer, when they come to the multi-tenant cloud, specifies the amount of CPU, memory, and disk, as well as the network capacity in absolute units, like a gigabit per second, in contrast to nebulous units such as low, medium, and high. So the performance assurance that the provider wants to give or should give to the customer is that each VM will be able to transmit and receive at least the capacity that they subscribe for, which is basically a minimum bandwidth guarantee. And together, these collection of VMs perform as if they were connected to one giant switch. Now, this model is not new. In fact, from the days of ISPs and VPN services, this has been known as the host model for performance guarantees. So I'd like to spend some time trying to illustrate why this problem is, in fact, a hard problem. A lot of previous work has gone into a great depth about this, and two main points which they elucidate are that the default sharing policy which we have in the network, which is if you have a number of flows all competing for bandwidth on a particular link, they get equal share, assuming they are TCP and assuming they're the same version of TCP. Now, this is bad because if a service uses more number of flows, it gets more bandwidth. So there's no predictability as far as performance is concerned. And the second reason, which again they elucidate in many papers, is the traditional mechanisms that we have for enforcing certain predictable performance for network traffic are insufficient in the case of a cloud. So they use quality of service mechanisms which are available in switches, but they don't scale. to meet the requirements of a cloud data center, which consists of tens of thousands of customers. So these two are some reasons which are discussed in literature, but there's a third reason. And the third thing is that because we're operating in a cloud, which has a high bandwidth network, and which offers extremely low latency between any two endpoints, traffic demands can be extremely random, bursty, and often lasts only for a few milliseconds. So the timescale at which you give your performance guarantees really matter. In fact, to give you a sense of the timescales, if you transfer a 100 kilobyte file over a period of 800 microseconds, that amounts to a gigabit per second of link utilization. So therefore, you need guarantees on the order of a small number of round-trip times, which is typically milliseconds in a data center. So let me try to illustrate this example using a simple experiment. Consider this topology where there are three physical hosts connected to a single switch. The hosts have a 10G pipe, which is directly connecting to the physical switch. There are two tenants, green and red. Green, the unsuspecting tenant, uses a single TCP flow to talk to its receiver. Red, being adversarial, uses a bursty UDP communication traffic pattern. And in fact, it so happens that the receivers are co-located on the same physical machine. Now, if you start the UDP flow at about 18 seconds, you realize that the throughput of TCP flow just plummets to about a very small value, close to a gigabit per second. Now, if the green customer calls the administrator and says, hey, something's wrong with my application, just go ahead and look, the administrator is very likely to see a graph like this, which represents the link utilizations averaged over 500 milliseconds. Now, what's wrong? In fact, if you look closer, the UDP traffic is bursting at full line rate. The line rate is about 10 gig, and notice the time, the units on the x-axis. There are a few milliseconds. And this is a real experiment. This is not a simulation. This is conducted in the lab. So let's dig deeper and try to understand what's actually going on. If you look at the switch which connects the receiver to the switch port, the switch can be thought of as a queue which has some limited buffer size. Now, many data center switches have very shallow buffers. And this is because it is very expensive to manufacture switches that have deep buffers at high and high speeds. So if you look at a burst of packets that arrive to this output queue inside the switch, the buffer tends to get filled up very quickly, because of which excess packets are going to get dropped. Now, what happens when packets get dropped? The UDP flow doesn't care, but TCP is going to back off. So the reason why this problem is hard is because the contention is happening inside the switch and is completely invisible to the end host. The end host does not see what is happening inside the switch because drops prevent the receiver from seeing the true demand which exists within the network. And also, here's the interesting case. The switch does not know how to distinguish between tenants because, as we have seen, the quality of service requirements on the switch, the scalability requirements are too high for it to be met inside the switch. But the receiver has the tenant state, and it doesn't see the contention. So the two high-level points are drops in the network, they hide the true demand. And in fact, the elusive nature of TCP, due to its elasticity, it further exacerbates the problem. It makes the true demand detection extremely hard. So this is where the key idea of IQ comes. The idea is that of a bandwidth headroom. And recall that in our model, we want to give certain assurances of bandwidth performance to individual VMs which are co-located within the same machine. And as we saw earlier in this example, your ability to provide bandwidth guarantees rests on your ability to manage congestion within your network. And another important observation from the example is that congestion happens whenever link utilization reaches 100%, not over periods of 5 seconds or even 5 minutes, but at millisecond timescales. So the simple idea is don't let your links get close to 100% utilization. You leave the slack, which we call the bandwidth headroom, let's say it's about 10%. And what this allows you to do is to detect contention at the receiver even before it happens inside the switch. So in the simple toy example, where all hosts are connected to a single switch, if you think of this link as basically a 9 gigabit per second link, you can see the demand at the receiver. So now, this is a very simple toy example where the bandwidth headroom idea works if all the hosts are connected to one single switch. But what about a network of switches? Now, I'm going to digress a bit and talk about how networks were designed in the cloud. It turns out that the old way in which networks were designed were really bad. And so this is some slides from Brad Hedlund, who's at Dell. And he argues that the old network design, which consists of hierarchy of switches with oversubscription at each level in the hierarchy, is extremely bad because it leads to partition capacity. And in fact, this led to various research efforts such as VL2 and Portland that promised, in fact, a full bisection bandwidth network to hundreds or thousands of ports within a data center in a very cheap fashion. So the new way in which networks are designed, they look somewhat like this, which is you still have a hierarchy of switches. There's a leaf and there's a spine. And the interesting thing to note here is that all racks are equidistant from each other. Or at least this is the case if you have tens of thousands of hosts within a single cluster. So the two main points are this uniform capacity available across all the racks in the cluster, and oversubscription, if it exists, only exists at the top of rack switch. In fact, networks are themselves built as a service to resemble one big switch. So recall that in our simple toy example, where all hosts are connected in a single switch, your ability to manage congestion dictates your ability to provide performance guarantees. So how do you mitigate congestion inside a general network? It turns out there are two necessary conditions for this to happen. The first thing is load balancing, in which you try to ensure that if there are multiple paths between two endpoints in your data center, you try to utilize them as evenly as possible. And the second and the most important condition is admissibility, which is to say, if you have a single receiver that has, let's say, a 10 gigabit per second pipe, you need to ensure that the aggregate rate with which all the transmitters sent to a single receiver does not exceed the rate at which the receiver can drain traffic. In this case, if the rate exceeds 10 gigabits per second, then the fabric will get congested. So if you have an admissible traffic, then you're good. The fabric does not get congested. And in fact, these are the two main components which we need. Fortunately, load balancing is already handled. We already have mechanisms such as ECMP, and there's continuous research in this direction which tries to push the bar further. And for admissibility, we need end-to-end congestion control. That is one way to do it. And admissibility is what is ensured by IQ. So let's step back a bit and look at the IQ platform. So notice that at the receiver, we have this so-called congestion detectors that ensures that the link connecting the server to the switch does not exceed 9 gigabits per second, or the bandwidth headroom is maintained at all times. There might be multiple VMs which are co-located. There is one congestion detector for every VM that is instantiated. And this basically implements the high-level sharing policy, which we talked about, in this case, it is the minimum bandwidth guarantee of 3 gigabits per second to red and 6 to green. Now, we saw that just detecting congestion at the receiver alone is not sufficient. You need to enforce admissibility. So therefore, you need to have rate limiters which exist on the transmit side. Now, the rate limiters need some information from the receivers to adapt its rates in a timely fashion, which is where the feedback mechanism comes in. So congestion detectors, they detect and they communicate feedback to the transmitters, which adapt their rates locally. So notice that we're not depending on any global information. And these adaptive rate limiters enforce admissibility. So does the mechanism even work? Recall this toy example where you had three hosts connected to a single switch. Let's say that an administrator wanted to specify this policy where UDP gets about 3 gigabits per second and TCP gets an assurance of about 6. Now, without IQ, you saw a graph something like this, which is when UDP starts bursting, TCP's throughput just plummets. But with IQ, you see that the TCP tenant gets protection. It gets its minimum bandwidth guarantee, which it has presumably paid for. And another interesting thing to notice, despite the fact that we leave the bandwidth headroom at all times, we actually end up improving the cluster utilization at the receiver. So in summary, recall that the ability to provide bandwidth guarantees rests on your ability to manage congestion within your network. And if you have a network that's increasingly looking like this, and if you make sure that congestion doesn't happen within your fabric, you don't need the fabric to be tenant aware. And therefore, you treat your network as essentially one giant switch, leaving all the state at the edge where it is already available for management purposes. So all I've talked about today is real. We have built it. And we have a working prototype that works at 10 gigabits per second. And there's a Linux and a Windows implementation. We have tested it with a number of other traffic patterns and using real-world applications. And it's also available on GitHub, but fortunately, there's no, or unfortunately, there's no documentation. Thanks, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Wenji from Fermilab. I have a question about how do you do the bandwidth handling? How to check with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let me go back to the architecture diagram. So we leave a bandwidth headroom of 10%. So we know that you should not allow traffic entering the server to exceed 9 gigabits per second at any point in time. So we measure the rates at very fine intervals of time and communicate feedback to the transmitters to ensure that this 10% headroom is left at all times.
So you check the packet by packet?
Yes.
So how much the overhead will generate? And if it's 10 gig, now it's 40 gig, 100 gig, how can you do that in software?
Yeah, that's a good question. We found that the overhead is about 1 to 2% at 10G. And notice that if you want to measure your rate, you can actually start sampling packets to avoid the overhead. And the second thing is, these mechanisms are conceptually very simple. So if you're talking about future networks like 40 gig or 100 gig, I would say the best place to put this mechanism is, in fact, the NIC. And we talked to like a couple of NIC vendors, and they said all this requires is basically a counter, which is already freely available inside a NIC, and this can be implemented inside.
And another question, because yeah. Once you then the data using the network, they use it 100%.
Once, come again?
100%. If you send the data, you have 3 gig, right? You use bandwidth, the throughput is 3 gig, yeah. But the 3 gigs actually send at the 10 gigs per second. If
yes.
You use the
so
network...
So we actually measure, yes. So you're talking about the burstiness, right?
That's right.
So we measure rates at very small timescales, and the timescales we measure are about the same as the interrupt coalescing frequency, which is about a few hundred microseconds.
Okay.
So we measure rates at a few hundred microseconds.
But the clock, the system, the clock resolution is an issue, right?
The come again?
The clock resolution?
Yes.
The system clock resolution is 1 millisecond or one something. Then you go
okay.
To 10 gig, something works?
So in Linux, we had a high resolution clock that we could read. You could also use the timestamp counter, which is more accurate, provided you calibrate it right at boot time. So we do have like sources of high resolution clocks.
Okay, I'll talk later.